Full Service Radio is proudly supported and hosted by Simplecast, the easiest way for a podcast creator to publish and distribute audio on the internet. For more information, visit simplecast.com.
Full Service Radio.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to BYT Radio. My name is Brandon Weatherby. BYT Radio stands for Brightest Young Things Radio. Brightest Young Things is an arts and culture website based in Washington, D.C., with a presence in New York and Chicago. We record here every Thursday at noon at the Line Hotel at Full Service Radio. Too many ats in that.
Yeah, it's true.
Jack, I'd like to apologize for using too many ats. Is that a Twitter reference? Is that an Instagram reference? I don't know.
Either. I have the same problem when I'm like writing copy for things. It's like recorded at Full Service Radio at the Line Hotel.
Yeah. Also,
in Adams Morgan.
And now that you're doing these pop-ups.
Yeah, man.
Did you know what pop-up meant, other than like temporary thing?
Oh, is there an answer to this?
Yeah, there is an answer to this.
I mean, no.
Do you still not know what a pop-up is?
Pop up somewhere.
In this neighborhood in Adams Morgan, there are lots of pop-ups. Pop-ups are the third or fourth or fifth floor on buildings that didn't have a third or fourth or fifth floor.
Oh.
You could see a lot of illegal pop-ups in New York City.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, and there's always like, not controversies, but there's always signs you could see in Adams Morgan in the neighborhoods like no pop-ups on Lamont or no pop-ups on Ontario, etc.
Interesting.
And you could see really horrible examples and really great examples usually on the same block right around the corner. So there's a Safeway across the street around the corner from where the line is. There's a horrible pop-up.
Yeah, there is.
About two doors down, a really great pop-up.
Wow.
Now, Ivy City is a location in Washington, D.C. that I guess does not have a lot of pop-ups because it is an up-and-coming neighborhood. And speaking with us today is a man who likes to keep the microphones as far away from his face as possible. You could pull it up. It's okay.
Right over here.
Right over there. Witt, how are you?
Very well. How are you doing?
I'm all right. You're here.
I'm here.
I didn't think you'd be here. Because all of a sudden you weren't here and then you are here. Witt, what's your actual name?
Witt Kaffner.
No, but like Witt is on your birth certificate?
So I'm transgendered.
So?
So it was originally Whitney. But changing all of your documentation costs like hundreds of dollars and untold amounts of time. And so I haven't gone through the fairly laborious process of getting all of my documentation changed.
So I thought you were doing the punk rock thing where like, I have a friend named Aaron Cynic. His last name isn't Cynic. I have a friend named Eric Labrat. His last name isn't Labrat. I've known him for Eric Labrat and Aaron Cynic for, at this point, 2 decades. I thought you were doing I'm a writer. You're doing a Walt Whitman / I'm smarter than you type of thing.
Oh, God, it already feels like so much to live up to. I'm like, no, there's an H. I'm not that cocky. Like, that just feels like a lot.
No, but I like your name a lot. Do you like your name?
I love my name.
Whit.
Yeah, especially because I feel like, you know, for a lot of folks who transition, they have to come up with one and they find their own personal connection to it. But I feel really fortunate that I was able to just take my given name and shorten it.
Do you like your last name?
Kaffner, I have to spell it all the time. Everyone thinks it's a C and not a K. So, I mean, if these are my trials in life, you know, I can muscle through.
Do you have a name that's not easy to make fun of when you're like a kid, but then once everyone knows what a catheter is, they probably think of your name?
Oh, yeah.
I got a silly last name. My last name is Weatherby.
Weatherby. And that's your given name?
That's my given name. That's not spelled correctly. It's a great name. It's not spelled correctly in any way. So whether you think W-H-E-T-H-E-R or W-E-A-T-H-E-R,
right.
Nope, my name is W-E-T-H-E-R.
So you have to spell your name constantly, too.
No, I don't spell it ever. And then it's B. It's B-E-E, like the insect. People always spell it B-Y. I never spell it because email exists. And when I know if you spell my name incorrectly and we've emailed back and forth, you don't care about me.
Yep.
You don't care about other people. You don't care about making acquaintances friends. You don't care about making strangers acquaintances. You're trying to get that business money. You get the fuck out of here is what I say.
It drives me crazy when people don't pay attention to name.
Okay. So your name is Witt, which is short for Witt.
Yeah.
Great.
Exactly.
That's awesome. is it half or a third?
I'm one third of the Republic.
One third of Republic Restoratives, which is known for being the only queer and women-run distillery.
That's right.
In the country or the world, or
we're one of the
DC?
Few women-owned and operated distilleries in the world.
Okay.
And then we're also one of the handful of openly LGBTQ-owned and operated.
Okay. Now this seems silly to me. not that you are, but that there aren't others.
Right.
Do you think it's because all things liquor-based were founded in a fear of masculinity and depression?
I think that given how long the liquor industry has been around,
yes,
it's really more of a patriarchy.
Fine. Grandfathering I'll things concede. Do you worry about alcoholism?
Absolutely.
Do you, for yourself or in general? Because I just realized that that's a pretty big question.
Especially in our industry.
Yeah.
I think that it's an industry full of high stress, high pressure, long hours.
Yeah.
And so I think that any industry like that lends itself to a higher incidence, right, of substance abuse of some kind.
Yeah, but if you're, but at your level, if you're the one that's owning and operating something, it's not unlikely, because I'm sure there's a lot of sad stories, but you have to, you're doing something that a lot of drunks can't do.
Yeah, I think that's so. Right. I think you find out pretty quickly whether or not you have the staying power to.
Yeah.
And like for us, we're a really small business. It's not like we operate in some giant organization or we have an angel investor or we're fifth generation distillers.
Okay, so can we talk about the money behind this place?
Because yeah,
I'm sure
absolutely.
That's what you wanted to talk about. Okay, so for people who have no idea what we're talking about, Republic Restoratives is a distillery slash.
We also have a cocktail bar that's built into the space.
And that's in Ivy City. Mm-hmm. And when I say Ivy City, I mean like the one place in Ivy City where you know all the businesses are. You're in the same little structure. You're across the street from the Nike store.
Yep.
You're around the corner from Big
Big Chief. Chief is on the same block. Yep.
Across the street is Ari's Diner. Your current collaborator, City Winery, I think is on the other end of the block. Like
Caddy,
like around the corner.
They're around the
Ivy
corner.
City
they're
Smokehouse.
In the old Love Club space.
All the stuff.
Yeah.
You're there. It's in this weird trans. It's I think it's fair to say it's a weird transitional neighborhood right now.
Absolutely.
Okay. Seemingly every month there's a brand new business. There's that amazing motorcycle shop.
I know.
That's awesome.
It's fantastic.
Yeah, it's still cool. It makes me want to ride a bike, which is very dangerous.
Yeah.
But it looks so good. Anyways, you guys are sort of an anchor for this neighborhood-ish type of thing, right?
We were one of the first folks to open within the last... I mean, the first people to open with a distilled spirits permit in D.C.
Yeah.
were Green Hat. They're on the same street as us.
Okay.
Fenwick Street,
yes.
which is what runs opposite, perpendicular to
okay.
New York Avenue.
So I'm assuming you guys are there because that's where the space is.
Exactly.
Okay.
When we started looking for space, there were 11 buildings that could be zoned for holding a distillery, because you're looking at high has, you know, manufacturing production. There were 11 buildings. Most were total teardowns.
Uh-huh.
You know, we were in no position to be buying a building that
sure.
was going to have to be rebuilt.
Sure.
And so we lucked into finding that, but we couldn't even afford to buy that building. We found that building, got it under contract. Shopped around to try to find someone to like collaborate with us and go in,
yeah,
and we
yeah.
couldn't find anybody.
Okay,
so we had to end up selling the contract to a developer.
Okay,
which was not Douglas at the time, but now is Douglas.
So now you're renting, or do you own the building?
We rent.
Okay, you're renting.
A great 10-year lease.
Okay.
But we were one of the first folks to open, and since then, it's like every month that we come to work, there's a new place to eat or to drink or to buy a motorcycle.
So you're doing so well that you might not be able to afford to buy your building one day because you've established the neighborhood.
I think that, yes, the neighborhood has changed so much and so fast that a lot of folks have trouble affording to stay in Ivy City.
Let's go back a little bit further. Why do this at all? What was the impetus to start Republic Restoratives with two other people?
I mean, like all the most brilliant ideas started late night over glasses of whiskey.
Okay, so what kind of whiskey? Do you remember?
So I actually wasn't there. This Republic Restoratives was actually opened by Rachel Gardner and Pia Carrison.
Mm-hmm.
They were childhood best friends who grew up in Saratoga
mm-hmm.
in upstate New York. And they were on Rachel's family's now defunct maple sugaring farm. Drinking whiskey late at night, looking at this old dilapidated barn. And they had that conversation that so many people have where they're like, you know what? Like, I love whiskey. You love whiskey. Like, we should open a distillery together.
Sure.
You know, with like intermittent, maybe slurring, unclear.
Yeah.
But like late night conversation. And I've had that late night conversation too, but like I didn't go and turn that into a company.
I understand having that conversation and then doing the thing when there's a barn involved in upstate New York.
Yes.
But I don't understand doing it in Northeast DC, where there's 11 buildings in the entire district that you could are zoned to do this. Why do this in DC proper?
Well, there are a couple of things. So that conversation, the initial one, happened in probably 2005.
Okay.
And then it kept happening earlier and earlier in the evening and more sober over subsequent years.
Which is, I think this is how all decisions should be made.
Right? Like over time, you let it age, like
yes.
a whiskey.
Yeah.
So Pia and Rachel, at this point are adults. You know, they grew up together, but uh-huh. Rachel's living over on the West Coast in Seattle. Pia's living here in D.C. She's the chief of staff for Congresswoman Gabrielle Giffords, the congresswoman out of Tucson, Arizona, who was tragically shot but miraculously survived. Pia was the chief of staff during that tragedy and oversaw her recovery and eventual stepping down from Congress to start a responsible gun ownership pack. And so for Pia, that was one of those moments in life that really calls the question on, like, are you chasing all of your passions? Because life can be very unpredictable and it could be short. And so for Pia, she called up Rachel when the dust had sort of settled and was like, look, we've been talking about this forever. And DC just changed a bunch of laws to make it more amenable to open a craft distillery. Do you want to move across the country and try to give this a go here? Because the structure of laws is so important to how a small distillery like ours can keep its doors open and make payroll. For us, being able to sell bottles on site, being able to put our spirit into cocktails that you can then drink in like the highest expression on site, that makes all the difference. We have a huge event game. The mayor had her birthday party at our distillery. And it's because the city has made it amenable to this kind of small business activity. So Rachel ended up packing up her life in Seattle, finished an apprenticeship at a distillery, drove across the country, stopping at every craft distillery along the way to get samples of, you know, American-made craft spirits. And then we all shacked up off of 8th Street, actually at 8th and K. We covered a row house that we all lived in together in butcher block paper and brainstormed for months. And then Pia and Rachel took their business plan to a bank to try to get funding.
And where do you come into this plan?
I basically just tried, two of my closest friends were trying to open a whiskey distillery. I was like, I did news clips for a while. I did whiskey clips.
Okay.
And I sent them clips about, you know, the industry in general and small batch whiskey and DC, you know, cocktail scenes. I just tried to do whatever I could to help out.
Now you have, let's keep going. So you're at 8th and K in a row house.
Yep.
8th and K Northwest?
Northeast.
Northeast. Okay. You're at 8th and K Northeast in a row house planning this. How do we get from there to Ivy City?
So in looking for a building, like we said, we looked around. Everywhere was a teardown. But Ivy City at that point housed a number of industrial buildings, and most of them had been unoccupied for several years, not like decades. There's still like this impression that Ivy City just wasn't on the map and nothing was happening is not true.
No, that's
like,
not
things
true.
Have been going on. And so our building used to be G&I cafeteria and a food wholesaler.
Yes.
And so when we found the space, it looked like the last shift had just sort of mic dropped.
Well, it still kind of looks like the entire neighborhood is a bunch of wholesalers and just giant plants. And that's not a bad thing. It's just a different type of neighborhood.
Right.
It's for business, not living.
Not the like customer facing engagement.
No, and now it can go on. Yeah, weekend. Now it's the transitional period between mm-hmm. the two. I think. I don't know. What year do you actually turnkey on the place in Ivy City?
We opened our doors on Mother's Day weekend of 2016.
So almost 3 years.
Yep.
That's
coming up.
Pretty great. So you've been around for 1,000 days in this location proper. The neighborhood has changed dramatically. Mm-hmm. How has your life changed?
Man, I no longer work a desk job.
Do you miss your desk job?
Never.
Do you want to talk about your desk job?
I was in speaking about another industry where there is rampant drinking because of long hours and late nights. I was in politics for about a decade before this. I got my start on the 08 Obama campaign in New Hampshire and then managed a few races.
You know what happened today?
Mm-hmm.
What happened today?
Wait, what happened today?
Are you being sarcastic?
Yeah.
Biden announced officially.
Oh, Biden. Yes. I mean, yes.
What do you think?
The tweet heard around the world.
About your... Not boss, your co-boss. What do you think about Joe Biden entering the 2020 race?
I think for Democrats to have many options right now is not necessarily a bad thing. I think we have a very robust conversation.
No, you didn't tell me what do you feel? How do you feel about it? Not what you think is the right diplomatic answer. How do you feel about it? Will it affect anything, good or bad?
I think that... On like a personal level,
yes.
I feel happy for Joe to be able to finally like throw his hat in a ring at a time that he feels excited about.
Listen, I'm a big fan.
You know, go for it, Joe.
I also like when losers keep running every decade. It's a good consistent thing to do. You know,
yeah.
You got to check those boxes.
Yeah.
And when I say loser, I mean he was trounced in every election he's ever been in. That was for the presidency of the United States of America.
He's a really rough primary history.
Because he's a loser.
He's had a really rough primary history.
I don't care. Stop losing, baby.
At this point, I'm excited by the fact that we have some new blood in the field.
There you go.
That's a good thing.
Of course, of course, of course.
But at this point, I'm like, all right, fine. It seems like everybody is jumping into the presidential race. I unfortunately can't because I really love my job right now. And I
that's the one reason.
But that's what everyone says. They're like, well, I love my job right now. I can't possibly run for president.
How much you want to bet Trump wins? And by the way, Jack, do me a favor. Open this up to anyone that ever talks about this on Full Service Radio. I will bet any single person $5 Trump wins. And I will give you the five to like hold in a kitty.
This doesn't sound like... I don't see the incentive for
the
me
November 9th, 2020, either all these people get paid money, which would make everyone happy and I'll be happy, or I'm rich and I buy the line because I'll have made that much money.
All those Lincolns, yeah.
I feel like if there was any lesson that I took away from 2016, it was to never assume that you know how a race is going to go.
See, this is why I'm smarter than you. I wrote a book about how Trump is a wrestler, and so far I have not been surprised by anything that's ever happened. And by anything that's ever happened, I mean just the last 3 years. Since you've turned key...
That's a great streak.
Since you've turned key on Republican Restoratives, I have not been surprised by anything. I'm not...
Whole new world starting that year.
I didn't say I was happy. I just have been surprised.
Yeah.
Like, I see where it's coming. Anyways, what's coming up for Republic Restoratives? So you're working with City Winery. Mm-hmm. That's actually the BS reason you're on the show. Your story is super fascinating. You guys get a ton of press because you have a super fascinating story. And people really care about this craft stuff, this craft spirit stuff, and there's not a lot, and you'd think there'd be a lot more. You'd think there'd be at the level of the beer scene right now, but once you understand how this stuff is made, you realize, oh, that's not physically possible. It's a lot more difficult to do what you guys do than a brewery.
So because my background wasn't in spirits, I mean, I was passionate about spirits and passionate about cocktails and great food, but coming out of politics and moving into this, it dawned on me not long before opening that like we obviously couldn't open with a whiskey.
Yes, we had it takes
to have
a minute.
Right. That we have to have an unaged spirit that you launch
That's
with.
Right.
So, I mean, so many wild learning lessons. But yeah, I mean, to be able to make it to the point that your whiskey is, you know, ready to actually be bottled and be released and be awesome, it takes a lot of creativity.
Are you
going to...
You're currently bottling in the spot in D.C.
Yeah, we bottle everything on site.
Okay. How long did that take? Because like you said, it's not like a beer. It's an offsite process for a lot of places, right?
So what we did was we launched with Civic Vodka. That was our first product out. We felt like gin was really well spoken for in DC, and so that's the reason we didn't start out with a gin. We've got Green Hat down the street, 1-8 around the corner, Magnus around the other corner, like gin's represented. So we started out with a corn-based vodka called Civic because we thought that Tito's was a really solid starting point. We like corn as a base for vodka. It provides a sweetness on the tip of the tongue and a round mouthfeel, but we wanted to make something that was going to be demonstrably smoother.
Okay.
And so what we do that's different from other vodka producers is after distillation, we spend 7 days charcoal filtering it 2,300 times.
Is that too many times?
We actually did a test. So it takes 7 days to do about 2,300 through the pump.
Yeah.
If you run it to 10, the returns are de minimis. 5 days is not quite as smooth as we would like it. Three days not, but we did test.
It was just randomly like 23. That's the number. We're
this
doing
is a lucky
it.
Number. And so,
have you been to Sagamore Spirits?
Yeah, I have.
What do you think?
I think that they're putting out great product. I mean, their port finish is really fantastic. They're playing around with a lot of barrel finishes.
For the listener at home, Sagamore is in Baltimore.
That's correct.
And it's a massive facility. It's the kind of facility you can literally not have in Washington, D.C. because the footprint would not allow for it unless you got like an RFK contract.
Right.
That's how big this place is.
Yeah.
But they're a whiskey producer and they are not yet, you're not yet tasting the whiskey that they're currently making because it takes so many years.
Right.
So, whiskey and Republic. Let's get to that.
Yeah.
Because that's kind of like the impetus for this, right? It wasn't Civic Vodka. It wasn't vodka. No offense to vodka drinkers. Good for you. You're the biggest population in all of drinkers. I get it. It's not,
thank you all.
Not for me. Good for you. Whiskey's where it's at. Why do the whiskey, if it's the most... I think it's the most difficult to produce of the main spirits that you can produce. Like, you can't do mezcal here. Just the climate doesn't allow for it.
Legally, it's challenging. Rum, honestly, like, I have a huge respect for rum producers.
Is rum the most difficult?
Rum is really challenging because of having a sticky... It's hard enough to have wheat and to have grain in your facility and to deal with that dust. But having to deal with molasses and raw cane sugar is just a whole other ball.
All right, let's rank every liquor from start to finish. Number one... rum. Number two, mezcal. Number three, whiskey.
I would say So the one thing that with mezcal is that you don't have the elevage, you know, the aging aspect of it in like traditionally made mezcals, although more people are experimenting with that. But I think elevage lends itself to a whole other skill set. When you look at the folks who are making cognac, armagnac, like who are aging things for 30 years.
So that should that be number one?
I feel like it's all different skill sets. I think rum is probably the hardest because you've got aged and unaged. And then I would say, you know, doing things that are going to have to sit for 30 years, having to land that plane is very hard.
Did you ever play Top Gun on the NES?
No.
That was the whole problem. You got to land the plane. Anyone could fly the plane. Landing the plane is difficult. Anyways, let's get to your specific whiskey.
Mm-hmm.
Could you talk us through that process? Clearly, you and your partners like drinking it in 2005. 2019, you have a building. How do we get from drinking someone else's product to making your own product to selling your product?
Yeah. So with our two whiskeys that are out right now, Burrow Bourbon and Rodham Rye, we actually work with a whiskey gray market. We're laying down our own weeded bourbon in-house right now. We actually work with Wade's Mill, which is a local producer. We buy almost all of, I believe, their corn and wheat. But we're laying down our own bourbon right now. That sits upstairs in our barrel room. We're super excited for that. At the same time, we wanted to hone the skills that go into making a consistent whiskey product. So you're not buying one bottle and then you buy the next and you're like, wait, what?
And I've had that problem with some local distilleries. It wasn't in DC proper. It was in Virginia. And I'm sure you probably know which one I'm talking about. I bought a whiskey. I had a whiskey in the tasting room and it was one of my favorites. And I brought it home and it tasted like something completely different.
Oh.
How do you regulate that taste when you're just starting out?
So for us, we wanted to hone that skill. And so what we do is work with the gray market.
Okay.
So we basically reach out to a broker. We let them know we're in the market for aged juice. Now, when you have somebody like Four Roses who has a single barrel expression, if they were to go and like release their single barrel, they need to make sure it is relatively consistent, even though it's a different barrel every time.
Sure.
And so occasionally they'll go in and be like, you know, barrel 819 through 825, they don't taste exactly right.
So you have like
they're still good.
You have like one professional taster saying like, this is not on par with this.
This does not taste the same.
Okay.
And so then what they do to recoup their losses is sell that onto the whiskey gray market.
Interesting.
So they never want us to run around saying that we have Four Roses, right?
Oh.
And so it's gray for a reason.
Understood.
It's crazy. What happens is we start getting 200 ml sample bottles, like four times the airplane bottle size.
Yeah.
They show up at the distillery in the mail. They have the state of origin, but not the distillery. We can test the proof in house. They legally have to have the age statement, but we don't even know what the mash bill is.
This is so fascinating.
It's the craziest fly-by-night process. And they'll show up with notes that say wire us 30 grand in 24 hours or somebody else will.
Shut up.
No joke.
We've
literally gotten that note on a bottle.
Like a ransom note.
Yeah. We've had wind sprints to try to find $1 million in 96 hours. And because somebody else found it in 72, we couldn't buy the whiskey.
That's crazy.
It's nuts.
Is there a gray market bar or cocktail lounge that specifically serves gray market cocktails?
So I would argue that almost every bar is that.
Okay, continue.
So a lot of folks use sourced product. So Bullet is all made at MGP, which is in Indiana. Templeton, which is all MGP, is made in Indiana. Redemption Rye, which is all MGP, is made in Indiana. And there's nothing wrong with it.
No.
This giant place in Indiana makes awesome, consistent product. But we want to be like really, really transparent about our whole thing because we think it's fascinating.
It is. This is so great.
Yeah.
Okay, does no one talk about this because it makes it seem like not mysterious and like whiskey is this magical thing that takes blah, blah, blah. No, it's just one dude in Indiana.
Yeah, for a lot of the stuff that's out there,
this
it's
is
all
crazy.
Coming from one place.
Why don't I know about this? Do you only know about this because you're in the industry or do you know about this because when you're doing the research, you figured this out and just other people you don't think find it interesting?
In doing like the no joke, the whiskey clips, like that's why I started to really dig in. I was like, I have a huge foundation of information that I got to start to build in my brain. And so in reading and going in depth, that's when articles started to surface in like 2014, 2015 about this process. And the folks who haven't been transparent about it have like taken knocks on it on their brand because, you know, then people are like, wait a second, what? You're not making, you told me this was made in Iowa and that it was, you know, you and your grandpa on a farm and none of that's true.
You're all liars.
And like other folks just kind of don't touch on that brand story.
Of course.
And that's okay too. Everybody has their own way of trying to like make, you know, run in the black.
So when you'll go, okay, so the gentleman behind the glass right now, Jack, he's going to the James Beard Awards. And at the James Beard Awards, I'm assuming there's going to be like a bunch of like food booths and a bunch of liquor booths. And there's a ton of these food events. And I know that you've been to them. And I know that, Jack, you've been to them where there's like all these liquor companies. Now, are you telling me that sometimes 90% of this one specific type of spirit is all from the exact same roof? It's all under this exact same umbrella?
Yes.
That's crazy. What is actually worth it then? Why am I spending more money? Let's talk about this.
So what you're really paying for is the palette of the master blender. Like what
That's
you are,
such a weird turn of phrase.
What you are really paying for is like, and a lot of this is stylistic. You may be someone who's really into a high malt bourbon.
Okay.
That may like be your thing that you love. And like, I love a bourbon that's going to have a little bit of rye in it because I think it adds this nice structure. But learning how to blend and like provide a consistent product has been something we wanted to hone, not on the stuff that we release that we laid down for 3 years. Mm-hmm. So we work with the Whiskey Gray Market to release things like Burra Bourbon and Rodham Rye, where we find a great base whiskey and then we bring it into DC and then we sit it in American Oak for a little while longer. And then we get a different barrel also from a gray market. And we sit the whiskey in this other barrel that we find is going to augment the flavor, right? So, for example, Burra Bourbon, batch one was a six-year-old bourbon from Kentucky, which is now impossible to find.
Okay.
But we sat that in French oak that had held Chardonnay and Sauvignon Blanc.
Okay, okay.
So Burra Bourbon batch two, which is out now, is a five-year-old wheated bourbon that we sat in Barbados rum casks
okay.
for up to 6 months.
So you are adding stuff to it. It's not like you're just repackaging stuff. You are altering flavors.
Because we're learning through that process. Sure. And because we feel like it, I mean, it gets done in the Scotch world a lot of using unique barrel finishes.
Yeah.
And American whiskey has just been a little more conservative about it.
Huh. Where do you get your barrels? Do you just travel and try?
I wish. We do not have that kind of buying power because we're like so in the spirits industry, we are so small.
Okay.
And so for us, we reach out to a broker, we get a spreadsheet, and they're like, we have Armagnac barrels. They're this size, they're this price. And you're like, cool. Well, what maker are they from? What type of grapes did they hold? How long did they hold the grapes? Sorry, I can't tell you. Because then you're going to be able to figure out the maker and they don't want.
Have you figured it out after the fact?
Sometimes we have, but we've had to sign NDAs.
I'm not asking your name names, but have you figured out who everyone actually is, or do you think you know? There's a big difference.
So with our barrels on Burra Batch 2, yeah. We know that they're plantation.
Okay.
So they're plantation rum barrels. Awesome. The whiskey, we had to sign an NDA. So we did find out after purchase who it was from.
So they tell you.
We did find out, but we don't always. So Burra Batch 1, I still cannot tell you the mash bill of.
Because you don't know or you can't legally?
We don't know.
You don't know.
We okay. literally never knew.
That's crazy.
So then you're kind of guessing. You're like tasting through it and you're like, I mean, we know it's bourbon, so we know it's 51% or higher corn.
Oh, this is
but
crazy.
It's nuts.
Do you like detective stories?
Now I do.
Yeah,
detective spirit stories.
Listen, we do a lot of true crime stuff at BYT, and it's to me, it's really depressing. Because it's never a good... You don't find
it's
out...
Never,
the yeah. mystery isn't like, they're alive and thriving!
No, there's a crime.
Yeah. Yes, but this is like a fun mystery where everyone gets to have delicious spirits at the end.
Yeah, exactly.
Let's actually talk about the reason you're here, 30 minutes in. You are now collaborating with your sort of neighbors.
Yeah.
You're collaborating with City Winery on...
Grappa.
Which is...
Grappa is a grape-based spirit. It's an unaged, in our case, eau de vie.
Now, is it an Italian thing?
It is Italian okay. in roots. And actually, the woman who really brought single varietal, which just means one type of grape, grappa, into prominence, she is actually our inspiration for basically picking a single grape varietal and making a grappa out of that.
Okay, so how are you collaborating with City Winery?
So, real casual, real neighborly. They like reached out to us and said they just finished a pressing last fall and were we interested in the pumice, which is just the skins that are left over after the fermentation and the pressing. So they
okay.
get out all of that alcoholic wine juice or almost all of it.
Uh-huh.
And then they're like, we have a bunch of solids left over. And in like the tradition of Italian thrift, they use, it's like tail to, or snout
not
to
tail.
Tail.
Yeah.
And so they were like, come on over, grab it. We did a practice run to make sure we actually knew how to produce it. And we uh-huh. studied up on grappa. And then we went over and we basically drove the forklift down the alley.
That's so great.
And we got a tote full of grape skins, mostly skins, which is great.
Did it smell good or does it smell like anything?
It smelled really good.
Yeah.
It smells like really young wine, but super
yeah.
grape forward, a little bit raisiny. And so we get all these solids, then we dump them, we add water. We then run that with a pump into the still.
Okay.
At this point, you've already got alcohol in the skins and uh-huh. the remaining juice. So we then turned our still on, let that heat up. We did a 12-hour distillation run on a still that had a column on it.
Okay.
And then we let that come off clear, and we aged it. We let it sit unbarreled
okay.
for 6 months. And that just allows some oxidation and some mellowing of flavors
okay.
without it actually imparting wood flavors that would overwhelm the grape.
So these are in wood barrels. Open for 6 months?
Actually, not wood barrels. We basically keep them in a plastic tote.
Okay.
So it's food safe and everything.
Understood.
There's no BPA
Understood.
In, but just...
Now, okay, what does it taste like?
So I actually brought a sample
okay. So
that you could try it.
Okay.
Because I think that that'll help. But as we like nose and taste through it, what you're going to get is this really like raisiny, fruit forward quality.
Okay.
It's going to be, I get a little bit of like candied citrus almost.
Okay.
On the nose and on the finish.
What's the proof of this? Is it wine proof or is it spirit proof or is it somewhere in the middle?
It's spirit proof.
Okay.
So it sits at about 88.
Okay, so this is not like a nice aperitif. Well, maybe it is an aperitif. I don't know.
It tends to be like an after dinner drink.
Okay. It's never comforting when the man or person has, what is it, a vial? Not a vial. Jesus Christ.
Dropper.
A dropper. That's what drugs are served from, sir. What is this?
This is, all right.
So it's sitting at 88.
Okay.
Proof right now, which means 44% alcohol.
Why is it dated?
Because that was the day that we proofed it down. We actually have it in bottles on site at the distillery. We only have about 90.
Okay.
So we're only going to be putting the spirit into cocktails that can be consumed on site. So we're running a special grappa menu with three awesome cocktails. One's a riff on a mojito.
Okay.
One's a riff on a Collins. And the other one we invented really as a nod to the woman who brought single varietal grappa into prominence. And so that one's basil, lemon, olive oil.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
Okay, so what am I supposed to do?
All right, so with nosing spirits, unlike wine, you don't want to go and like stick your nose in the glass for a long time.
You don't want to do that.
You don't want to do that because the only synapses exposed to air in your whole body are a little 1-inch square patch at the top of your nose.
Okay.
And so if you go and like breathe deeply with something that's high proof, you're going to blow your palate out.
Got it.
So like what I like to do is stick my nose in once, take a little breath, go out, exhale, and then go back in again. It sort of helps to inoculate.
Okay. I'm going to talk while you do this so it's not silent because that's how bad radio exists.
Totally.
Okay. So now I'm going to do this.
And nose in. So you're smelling once, then you're stepping away, then you go in and smell again. And this just helps to not like have the ethanol fry those synapses.
It smells nice. I think. I don't know.
You're looking for like this grape note. I have synesthesia, so I see colors when I smell stuff.
All right, stop bragging. Wait, is that good?
I find it helpful because to me, it's like creating this subconscious association where I can then track down what that color is. So to me, I get purple on this, but it's not purple because of grapes. It's purple because of lilac.
What do you get when you smell a Miller Lite?
I get college.
Party. Where'd you go to school?
I went to Wheaton College in Massachusetts.
How was that?
Not the one in Illinois. It was
The one in Illinois doesn't allow dancing.
Yeah, it's a Footloose.
That's
college.
True. That's true.
Yeah, it's not my type.
I'm a huge no dancing fan.
Just drink standing. This at I like noon. To stand in the corner and drink Miller Lite.
That'd be weird.
Mm-hmm.
Anyways, okay, sorry. Miller Lite, continue.
So with this though, I get a little bit of this floral quality. It sort of smells like spring, which it's kind of a nice release for this time of year.
Okay.
So you get a little bit of that. And then when you go in to take a sip, what you're going to try to do is actually activate all of the taste receptors in your mouth, which don't only exist on your tongue because it's both taste and feel. So you're going to take a little taste, let it wash over your tongue, but then let it also get to your gums, which is something that we don't usually do.
No.
Yeah.
Should I do that now?
Yeah. Give it a shot. All right. What you think. So in like taking a sip like this, what you're doing is activating those taste receptors. You're going to get not only the taste up front, which is going to be a little bit floral, but then this finish that is sort of like candied citrus, like a lemon or an orange peel, or like a really sweet citrus, like a caracara orange.
Okay. I'm trying to not make mouth noises on mic because that's the
most disturbing
thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
Do you like what's the noise when people eat? Is there like a term for that?
When they're masticating?
Eating ASMR, I don't know.
Like, yeah, ASMR drives me crazy.
Yeah.
My favorite thing to do alone in the world is to go to the batting cages.
Oh,
right? My favorite thing in the world. I love hitting the ball. And the whole point of hitting the ball is you got to stay in the moment. You got to live in the now. You got to hit the ball. You got to move forward. You got to move forward. ASMR for me feels like the exact opposite. Like I'm not living in the moment. I'm not even living in my moment. And now I got to hear you eat. That sounds like the worst. So if anyone is disgusted by my gums hitting the liquor, I'd like to apologize. That is sincere. I've never heard that described before, and I could feel it tingling on my gums, which means I think I got to go to the dentist and not necessarily a read on your liquor.
With this, especially for me, I find that the spirit evolves a lot on the finish. So that means that after you've swallowed, you're starting to have this evolution of flavor. That's where I get that like lilac sort of note, this floral quality on the finish.
I'm getting the, like, springy, it suits the season feel.
Mm-hmm.
That being said, it's also a nice day out, and it's, like, 70s and sunny, so that might have something to do with this.
This is the longest spring I've ever seen in D.C. I feel like we've had 2, maybe even 3 weeks of it.
Is that good or bad?
I love it. It's fantastic. The Arboretum is incredible right now. Yeah, it's a whole
right
Saturday.
By the Arboretum. Go to the Arboretum. Plant sales this
come
Saturday.
Have a drink. I know.
Good plug.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Should I keep drinking this or no?
Up to you. Up to you.
How would you make this? How would you use this in a cocktail at home? Don't say what's available at Republic Resorts, but how would you take this bottle home and make something for yourself? And don't tell me you don't drink, because that'd be weird.
No. I definitely, for me, and having to make a drink with this, I would actually love to make a spritz with this.
I could see that.
Right?
But I think I'm also saying I could see that because it's so nice out.
It's
so I don't know if that's a good idea or it just suits the weather. I don't know if you're a liar.
I think a good drink has to suit the weather.
No, I disagree completely. Here's why. This dude over there likes scotch, yeah. Right? Scotch suits no weather unless it's dark and stormy.
Oh, there are a lot
and,
of beverage directors
and there should always be scotch around.
Spring.
No, I don't think so. Scotch to me is a very specific weather, like cold weather
drink. I think like a really peaty scotch could be springy.
I disagree completely. And like a mint julep mm-hmm. should be like the spring, right? But that doesn't mean you shouldn't enjoy a mint julep in November.
Breaking all the rules.
That's what I'm saying. You should drink what you want to drink whenever you want to drink it within reason.
All right.
And that's why I can't say, unless it's a seasonal like garnish,
mm-hmm.
like the olive oil drink, that sounded like a spring salad to me in a good way. I'm kind of drunk already. That's not a good sign. I said continue. There's no question to continue. I'm doing a bad job hosting. You'd put this in a spritz. That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. Because I think you've got some of those floral fruity qualities. But really, you know, I personally, before we made Grappa, I would never have gone out and bought a bottle of Grappa. And this is because, as you know, an American, I have an American palate I have to control for and try to expose myself to a bunch of new things that aren't going to be, you know, with the big distributors and being at all of the, you know, cocktail bars that I would go to.
Let's wrap this up. This is good. I like that on the back of my tongue. Am I not supposed to?
That's where I like it, actually. That's where I get those floral notes.
Great.
Yeah.
Okay. Where do you buy your liquor?
Man, I mean, I tend to be really in the distillery. So yeah, if I was going to buy
name a place that sells
there.
Your product.
No, Schneider's is extremely close to us.
Okay.
And so they're
and
right near
like
Union
them?
Station. Their selection is fantastic and they have an extremely knowledgeable staff. So they're like, they're always right there to help you out.
You named Rodham Rye, I think before the election. Is that correct?
We got the trademark in March 2016. We thought the election would go differently.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because of that, did it change how you feel about that liquor?
No. If anything, I love it more.
So it did.
Yeah.
Then it did change how you feel about it.
Yeah. I mean, like we got
it wasn't
the
just a consistently sad reminder.
No. I mean, we got the trademark on the name and we had planned to release it as a celebratory inaugural whiskey.
Yeah, we all did.
Yeah.
We recorded the first time I met Jack as I think the day of the election of 2016.
That's correct. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
And Jack was going around. This is when he was setting up Full Service Radio, the station. The line was like a year from opening.
Mm-hmm.
And he went around and was like, "What do you think? How do you think DC will change?" And I'm pretty sure everyone you talked to was like, "It's going to be great."
Pretty much.
And we were all wrong. Yeah. It's even better. Continue.
So wrong. And so for us, we kept the name, but we had to change the brand story. So we make it a tribute to all the women whose shoulders we stand upon.
Yeah.
And we donate a portion of the proceeds to recruiting and training women to run for office.
Here's my problem with Biden. Joe don't drink. Joe used to drink.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think Joe drinks anymore.
Yeah.
Could you look that up for me? I don't want to be wrong on this. Sorry, Jack. Could you look up, does Joe Biden drink? I don't think he drinks alcohol anymore. I think he used to. But then after his wife was tragically killed in a drunk driving accident, I think he does. Trump don't drink.
Mm-hmm.
He does not drink.
Thank you. Biden?
Correct. Biden.
Okay.
Or Trump.
Mm-hmm.
Barack Hussein Obama drank. I think he did a pretty good job.
Of drinking?
No. Living in the world.
Yes.
George W. Bush didn't drink because he had drinking problems. So it's kind of good that he didn't drink. But overall, I would venture to say not a great job.
So we're looking at this becomes a correlation versus causality question.
I like the leader of the free world to imbibe every once in a while because you can't be a total dick if you're drunk because you'll get beat up and you'll get ejected from the bar.
That is true.
So that's my biggest problem with Joe. Joe don't drink. Trump don't drink. Somebody's got to drink.
I think
Hillary drank. She didn't.
Yeah, she is.
And when I say drink,
she's a rye
whiskey
fan, ironically enough.
She's not like, you don't have to be a bar fly.
Mm-hmm.
I just want someone to acknowledge, like, not all of this is bad for you.
Well, what is that question that, you know, that goes to the populace of, is this someone you'd want to have a beer with?
Well, yeah.
Ideally, they would have a beer in that situation.
Exactly. Yeah. Come on, guys. And right now, mostly guys. Yeah, Elizabeth Warren drinks.
Yeah.
She drank beer on her opening night video. Remember that?
Yeah, the launch. Yeah.
I'm going to have a beer. And that was nice. Anyways, I don't trust people that don't drink alcohol. Come at me, bro.
Gillibrand drinks, too.
Who does?
Kirsten Gillibrand.
Who? I think at this point, all of them other than Joe do drink.
Oh, okay.
I think they kind of have to. How are you going to do all these campaign stops and then turn down a beer? How are you going to do any St. Patrick's Day like?
Does Bernie Sanders drink?
I think so. Yeah. All right, cool. Will you name after any alcohol after any presidential candidate, or you feel like you might jinx the field?
Yeah, I think we'll probably stay out of picking a horse in this very crowded field. That said, we still want our products to speak to our values, and so the idea of naming it after another awesome woman who has done something great, that's not, you know,
here's impossible. The thing about this is I should not feel this way after this much alcohol. You and Republic Restoratives get a ton of press for your values, which is nice, but like the fact that no other distillery or brewery is really having values at their front and center is really weird to me.
I think that, look, there are a lot of pressures in business. I think people worry about taking on a stance that's going to cost them dollars. For us, like looking at, I think the 2016 election and how brands engaged with that on social media is actually really informative. So a lot of brands said, you know what, today's election day, it doesn't matter who you vote for, just make sure you go out and vote and then we'll have a drink afterwards. And our approach to this was, no. It absolutely matters who you vote for. Here's who we're supporting, and here is why. Because we're an at-risk community. Because my people won't be allowed to get married or, you know, live in their, like, use the right bathroom.
Have you ever considered giving a bottle to somebody that prevents a busload of people from voting in areas that would actually matter? You're not going to answer this question. I understand why.
Yeah, that feels wrong.
To me, that feels like a smart idea.
No, I mean, but for us, being able to give a portion of proceeds to recruiting and training women to run for office is important. Making sure that we have a diverse workforce that feels respected and included in their place of business, that everyone who works for our company makes a living wage. Like, we are really trying to go to bat however we can. And so with our tradition kits that we have around the holidays, a portion of proceeds from that goes to responsible, you know, making sure that we have responsible gun ownership in America.
You guys are doing what everyone should be doing, and I think that's my disappointment. That it's just like there's so many obvious wins for all these companies, and they're just like everyone should hang out and vote together. It's like no. Here's what you're doing it better than everybody else. So, Republic Restoratives is located at.
We're at 1369 New York Avenue, right across from the new Nike store in Ivy City.
There we go. And these Grappa specials will be available. It's already going on, correct?
We'll have it starting this weekend. We actually open tonight for service. Great. So we're open for cocktails Thursday and Friday starting at 5, and then Saturday and Sunday starting at noon. Open all day. We've got tours on the weekends as well. So come have a crack cocktail. Come learn how we make these spirits. And we can't wait to see you.
And I will be there buying all of my gifts from specifically that kit. One shot shouldn't make me feel this way, but here we are, and now I got to end with Best Week in Bets. We're going to play some transitional music. I'm going to say goodbye to Wit, short for Wit, and we'll come right back, all right? Is this you?
No, it's not. This is a friend. He goes by Cuyo, C-U-Y-O, based out of Austin, Texas. great dude.
I like it.
Yeah, it's kind of new agey.
One shot should not make me feel this.
Yeah, really. I mean, I can't day drink. I talk about this with Allison Lane, the co-host of GTFO Radio, all the time.
Oh, boy.
I can't day drink. Can't do it. If I have one sip of something at this hour, it's over.
Yeah. I don't feel good. No, it's great. I actually really enjoyed that conversation until I drank alcohol on microphone. It's part of my job. Doing my job. Speaking of doing my job, this weekend is a very important weekend for nerds all around the world. And when I say nerds, I mean the largest fan base in all of movie history. The Avengers comes out this weekend, which relates to Washington, D.C., because AwesomeCon is this weekend. And we have some Avengers-themed AwesomeCon friendly best weekend bets on the website right now. Go to brightestyoungthings.com to check those out. So what I'm going to do, if it's okay with you, Jack, is go through Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, what's going on, what we're going to recommend, and then if it's okay with you, you could chime in whenever you so wish. Is that okay?
That sounds great. Fan. I did not know that AwesomeCon existed, by the way.
AwesomeCon is our version of Wizard World.
Comic-Con? Are you just not Comic-Con. Allowed to call it Comic-Con?
No, you're not. Oh. You have to pay to call it Comic-Con.
I see.
So we're AwesomeCon. Which does not sound like a positive thing.
It doesn't.
It seems like the best ever con.
Yeah, exactly.
Which it's supposed to. But when I think of con, I think of grifters.
Right. Like, what's his name? Like, Bernie Madoff.
There you go.
The most awesome con.
Yeah. Or the Thanos lady. And Thanos from the Avengers. Anyways, it's a very busy weekend in Washington, D.C. It's a very nice weekend in Washington, D.C. In addition to AwesomeCon, the biggest hip-hop festival of the year is at RFK Stadium on Saturday. We will get to that. Let's actually start in order of things. I shouldn't have drank.
Is that the first event?
It's just me regretting drinking. The first thing we're going to talk about is Avengers. It's in the theaters today. It's already been spoiled for me. Well, I was working on the art for Best Weekend Bet, so go see Avengers as soon as possible. Most screenings start at 6 p.m. tonight. It's going to be at the Uptown. That's always a theater you can get tickets to. Moving on to other events that don't involve people with capes, Broccoli City Fest kicks off today.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Broccoli City Fest kicks off their Broccoli Con, which is different than Awesome Con. This is at the National Union Building. So we're going to recommend that. And also beginning today is the 2019 Smithsonian Craft Show. So those are very different, very similar organizations collecting people. You could buy small trinkets at one of them. Moving on. What exciting audio we're providing you right now.
This is good. I like it.
Do you hear the stuff in the background?
Yeah, faintly. You probably hear it more than the listener would.
Oh, I know that.
Yeah, it's good.
Great. Moving on to Friday. Do you have any picks for tonight? Tonight is Thursday, by the way.
Tonight, I don't, other than Jamal Gray DJing at the Lion Hotel.
What time?
From Full Service Radio, from 10 p.m. to 1:30.
That is just too late for a Thursday evening.
Well, it's a nightcap, you know, when you're done doing whatever else you're doing.
That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
Moving on to Friday, like we said, AwesomeCon kicks off at the Walter E. Washington Convention Center. Look at our photos from last year. They're very, very good photos. We actually have been shooting this every year in existence. Come back to the site next week for 2019 coverage. It's Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. If you like things like the hit movie The Avengers, you will like the hit con, Awesome Con. I will recommend, without prompt, The Mountain Goats at 930 Club. If you want to see 1,000 other people that look exactly like me, go to The Mountain Goats at 930 Club. And then I'm also going to recommend the Living Earth Festival, which kicks off at the American Indian Museum, and it runs through Sunday. So those are three things to do on Friday. In theory, very different, and in reality, pretty similar. At the same time, there's just a bunch of collections of people. I shouldn't drink this early. Moving on to Saturday.
Saturday. I've got one for Saturday.
What do you
got? Do drop in. Our good friend Paige Plissner will be DJing.
There you go.
And the name of the event is Brolapse.
That's a great name.
So it's 11 p.m. at the Dew Drop In.
If you want a Brolapse, I recommend heading to FedEx Field for Broccoli City. It's the big concert version of the entire weekend. It's the Childish Gambino date. He will close out the festival. You just made a face, Jack. Like,
No, that was unrelated.
Okay. I'm also going to recommend the Arboretum's Garden Fair and Plant Sale. Get a plant, everybody. Get those plants.
I think that's a good tip, actually.
Yeah. I will be renting a car and going to IKEA, everybody.
Wow.
Don't go to IKEA. Don't go to IKEA because I don't want to wait all day at IKEA. So don't go to IKEA. Go to Broccoli City Fest at FedEx Field. Moving on to Sunday.
I've got nothing on Sunday.
Fantastic.
Sorry.
I got three, and they're all concerts. Very, very different concerts. Girlpool's at Black Cat. We just interviewed Girlpool, so please go check out that interview on BritishYoungThings.com. One of the best concerts of the month happens to be on Sunday at the Anthem. It's Kaliuchis. Jesus Christ.
And oh, Kaliuchis is at the Anthem on Sunday?
With Georgia Smith.
Oh, I'll do that.
Look at that double bill. And then also the loudest concert of the weekend is Sun-O at the Howard Theater.
I don't know. I'm not familiar.
Pull up some Sun-O. It's Sun, all caps, O, and then three.
Sun-O?
Sun-O, S-U-N-N-O, and then three, not parentheses. When you're closing.
I've got it.
There we go.
Yeah. Those are parentheses.
Are those parentheses?
Yeah.
Yeah, this is going to be, you could probably just skip like 5 minutes in. There we go. That's Sun-O.
Is it like drone-y?
Yeah.
Oh, awesome.
It's going to be super loud.
Like that. Oh, great.
Yeah, thanks a lot. I'm wearing headphones. It's a fun weekend. Please do not go to IKEA this Saturday. I'd really appreciate it if you do avoid IKEA. It takes a long time if you're in IKEA with me. So just don't do that.
Do something else.
Go on Sunday. Make Sunday your IKEA day. Don't go tomorrow. Don't go Saturday. Go Sunday. Jack, you got anything fun this weekend besides seeing Paige DJ at the Dewdrop?
No, I was going to do the Something in the Water Festival at Virginia Beach. I decided against it. I don't really like being at festivals.
It took you how many? Hey, aren't you doing Bonnaroo this year?
Yes, I am DJing. It's easier to DJ a festival than to be an attendee at a festival.
When is Bonnaroo?
Bonnaroo is June 13th or so.
Very cool.
Somewhere around there.
That's nice.
Yeah. But I'm
who's
sure
headlining Bonnaroo this year? I'm not trying to be a dick. I don't know.
No, I mean, okay, I'll read. It's Fish is doing three sets.
In one night or
two
every
different
night?
Nights.
Okay.
Then we got Childish Gambino.
Oh, cool.
Post Malone, Solange. That's cool. Cardi B. I don't know.
That's fun.
These festivals all kind of are the same. Well, you know, the Something in the Water festival does seem interesting. And I'd love to hear from people that go. It sounds like it's going to be great. Teddy Riley's playing. That's not somebody that plays a lot of festivals.
I think Teddy Riley's at Pitchfork.
No, is he?
Yeah.
Oh, well, anyway. Rosalia is going to be at Something in the Water. I love her. Pharrell's doing some all-star.
Do you think who's going to play more sets? Pharrell at Something in the Water or Fish at Bonnaroo?
Fish.
Yeah. That was a fun show until I drank alcohol.
I think it was great.
And then it became an interesting show.
100%.
We'll be back next week with Derek Brown.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, that'll be a good one.
Let's close with some Sun-O.
Thanks for listening, everybody, and have a wonderful night.
Thanks for listening to this program on Full Service Radio, broadcasting and recording from the Line Hotel in Adams Morgan, Washington, D.C. Full Service Radio programming can be accessed live and archived on fullserviceradio.org. Our talk programming is available on most podcast apps like iTunes and Stitcher, and our DJ sets are available on mixcloud.com/fullserviceradio. Full Service Radio features over 30 weekly shows and over 50 local hosts covering every topic imaginable. If you want to be a guest or get involved, email us at info@fullserviceradio.org. Follow us on Twitter @FullServiceRDO, on Instagram and Facebook @FullServiceRadio. Thanks for listening.